extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Kalen Carr. It is the Monday crew, and it is the first Monday of 2022 with actual MLS games to talk about. Coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios, the best of the best from week one, the best thing we saw, the best performance by a team. Every single game we will talk through it, except for Houston RSL. Only partially kidding about that. Carlos Vela's contract situation comes into focus. So does his MVP form. Chicharito, the pregame fit. I know Dave wants to talk about those purple pants. And the late winner, too, Body Armor 2222 Player of the Week, is a 17-year-old Atlanta native who scored on his debut. Dom Dwyer is back. Since he begins their spoon defense, Pato! Nashville's move west starts with a dub in Seattle, and Shaqiri debuts and in the mailbag. We will draft more Golden Boot hopefuls. Lot to talk about. What's up, guys? How you feeling? MLS is back. Did it feel good? Did it feel right, Doyle?
Yeah. It did, actually. You know, the last 2 weeks of preseason preseason are always a grind, right? You're trying to get all that content out there, all that season preview stuff, and then CCL happens on top of it. So you kind of just feel like you're trying to keep your head above water, and then the games start. And like I was in this chair, glued to the TV, basically all weekend. Column came out. It felt good. I was listening to you and Charlie on MLS After Dark last night. Enjoyed that a lot, too. Got David Goss at 11 a.m. this morning. Like, it's just wall-to-wall MLS.
Jeez.
Have you
just
guys noticed Doyle has gotten more and more positive with time? I feel like 2022, he's turned a corner. This is big.
Yeah, there might be a gas leak near me or something. I might be able to.
There was some real Kalen Carr plug energy there from
there was,
Doyle. Like,
yeah.
He was hitting all the hits right there. You know, we got Twitter Spaces here. We got this content there. You can follow it all in this way. But only one of us actually got to a game, at least to my knowledge. That's you, Dave. So what a weekend it was for you. You actually got to do it in person.
Yeah, it was amazing. My heart, I got to take public transportation on the train down to D.C. Then I got to go to the game and the whole area around the stadium. We went to the opener Audi Field. I haven't been back since. It is completely different. It is wild. Like the amount of buildings built up and the way it's finished. And so when I walked over to the stadium, probably about 3-4 hours before the game, there was D.C. and Charlotte fans everywhere. You know, there's bars, there's restaurants. And then I got to pop by the supporter section pregame, which they do down on the river. It's like one of the coolest spots, and just chat with people. And it felt really good to just be back at a game and be around people who like the thing we like a lot as well, to get their ridiculous points of view, but then also realize my point of view is also ridiculous. So we're all in this together. It was a lot of fun. It was really good. Charlotte, 3-0 loss, but it was special to be around it and to talk to the people part of the club who've been building it and talk to the fans who, you know, made the trip because they didn't want to wait a week longer to see their team play. It was really cool, and I am very excited for next weekend now. I was already excited, but I was watching them post game and them celebrate the team, and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be nuts.
And you're going down there this weekend.
He's not
right?
working.
Yeah. No.
Not a work trip.
I bought tickets, and then afterwards I was like, am I going to regret this? Like, I'm missing a day of MLS action. Going out to Charlotte in March. Not sure that that's really, like, the weather that you travel for and all that stuff. And then I have a video of the players going over to celebrate or, you know, clap to their fans. And it may have
celebrate
been
Celebrate may not
as
be
what,
the term, yeah.
Yeah. It may have been as loud as what the DC supporters were doing with the team that won at home 3-0. Like, it was loud.
Shots
and these
fired.
Fans are into it. And so I think it's going to be pretty special. I know they're really excited. They said there's a lot of unique stuff that they're doing for the game day. And I think Saturday is going to be nutty, which I'm pumped about.
Kalen, you're not going to Charlotte. How'd you experience week one, man?
Well, I do want to say, you know, Goss is now Mr. Charlotte. I, you know, he's doing the hard work.
You thought you were.
You are Mr.
Charlotte. You thought you were OG, Kalen. And then we beat in there. I snuck in there and I took you.
March to the match, man. I'm going to be living through you.
You went to Charlotte, Kalen? What? That's insane. Like, I'm Mr. Charlotte.
If I am going to steal my plug title back, I will promote a feature I have coming out before the match. David Goss maybe will have one at the match live. Check out his Instagram. Susanna Collins and I went down there. So I think it's going to be like either the day before the match or maybe 2 days before. Still working on the final parts, but keep an eye out for that. Because we hung out with a bunch of fans in Charlotte and kind of led up to the match. And Miguel Angel Ramirez and Jalen Lindsay, a bunch of people. So it'll be fun.
Nice. But mark your territory there.
Yeah, there's my plug. God, that felt good. But I'm going to go to Austin for my favorite thing from opening weekend. I just think like that fan base was craving goals last season, right? And like showed up so many times and had such like an incredible atmosphere and all that excitement around it being an expansion team, but it just didn't always live up as far as the goals came. And I'm not sure they're going to score 5 every match, right? I don't know if they'll do that again maybe all season, but who cares? Because like that's the way you want to start off a season, right? That's the way, and there was kind of that feeling of even a little bit of pressure on Wolf, which I'm not saying is gone or anything like that, but just to... for a new team still. And we talked about Charlotte and them needing some confidence. And I think this is a big opportunity at home in front of that huge crowd and using that crowd. But Austin's crowd really pushed them forward and they scored some nice goals. They were relentless. They didn't wait. When you're playing against Cincinnati, just go for the jugular. And I think a team like that really did. So it was a big, big start for the Verde and Black to start the season. So I was hyped about that.
It was cathartic. It felt cathartic the way that they experienced it. And they had some openings against Cincinnati. We'll talk through those. Best thing I saw in week one, and look, it was all over the place as far as my viewing habits on this one goes, but between Gago Slanina and the No War in Ukraine shirt, the Sounders warm-ups and the t-shirts with the Ukrainian flag and the No War on those Allianz Arena, the bins lit up in the colors of the Ukrainian flag. San Jose Ultras had some TIFO. Houston and RSL shared a pick with the flag beforehand. There was just some real solidarity around the league in the face of, you know, what is awful for many, many millions of people. So I really appreciated those fronts. And man, Gago Slanina as a 17-year-old to also then make the save, to keep the clean sheet for the Fire, and to do that and speak so eloquently afterwards. He is a guy that I feel like we need to talk to on this show. And so we're in the process of trying to get that man on Extra Time very, very soon. He's 17 years old. So I guess he's... Man child?
Man child is fine right now. Then when he turns 18, then he's a young man, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, the delineations here are difficult. Doyle, what's the best thing that you saw, felt, experienced in week one?
I'm gonna stay with the Austin theme. I got a nice DM. Which is unusual, right? Because most people, when they DM me, tell me to go f*** myself. You're going to have to bleep that out.
That's our first bleep of 2022.
I got this like nice random DM from this guy. He said, "Hey, Matt, you're a huge reason I got into MLS back in 2015, and I've read everything you've written for 8 years now. Finally feel like I have a huge MLS moment to celebrate. 5-0 at home for Austin. Keep it up, man. And thanks for all the content." So if you're wondering why I'm putting good vibes and positivity into the world, I think it was just this really nice DM I got from a random
digital back
Austin
rub there.
Fan.
Just
yeah, it's
nice
great.
Little shoulder it's massage.
Best thing I saw all weekend.
Your column was 4,000 words this week. So if he's been reading everything you've written for 8 years, would we say that probably you are the most influential person in his life just in terms of pure volume? Because I can't imagine anyone else reaching those levels as far as total words, thoughts, infiltration into his brain.
Yeah, you know what? I might actually be that. And that actually makes me a little bit sad. A little bit sad for this young man. But he made me happy this weekend. So.
Wait, okay, bring up the vibes. Bring up the vibes.
He didn't send a photo too?
Yeah, he sent a selfie of himself and his wife. They're very cute. Happy little Austin family.
So that's wonderful.
He's got other influences. That's good to hear. Yeah.
I would throw out, and you know, shameless plugs once again, but just out of curiosity on Friday, I just threw a tweet out that was just, "Hey, like, how did you get converted to MLS? Why do you love the league? Who got you started?" And there are over 200 responses in there that truly were sort of like centering moments for me of like, okay, people, this is what it means to people. These are the familial relationships, the friend relationships, the fan to fan relationships, the fan to player, coach, club relationships. Like, this is the weight that it has in people's lives. And so I'm super happy for everybody who got to a game this weekend, who had a great time watching, who just felt like, you know what, MLS is back and that's awesome and I'm jacked for it. If you're playing fantasy, you're one step ahead of me. I, of course, forgot to create my team and a lineup. I'm so sorry, but we have a league. We will put the link back out. It will be exceedingly easy to beat me, but I promise to get my team in and get started for week two. Our winner was Deb's Football Club with 127 points in the Extra Time Fantasy League. They had Carlos Vela, and they captained Sebastian Driussi, which, yeah, captaining against FC Cincinnati, always a good look in that sense. Let's get into the breakdown here. Doyle, your biggest week one takeaway, and this is basically just an opportunity to flog the column. Go read it, folks, every single week on Monday, sometimes Sunday night. I mean, it is the definitive way to best understand what happened in Major League Soccer. What is your big takeaway, though? Wow. What is the thing that's overriding the thematically for the weekend?
Well, I had something, but then you were just so effusive and glowing in your praise that, like, that is my big thing from the weekend. Everybody's just filling the world with good vibes today. The big thing for me, it was the struggles of the CCL teams. I thought Seattle, Montreal, and I'm blanking on the other two teams for
Colorado.
Colorado, obviously.
NYCFC.
God, thank you,
this
David.
This is class.
Right? This is what you threw me off with all that positivity with me. I'm going to get back to it. So Colorado stunk in CCL, but NYCFC, Seattle, and Montreal were all very good. Those teams combined to go no wins, four losses. No draws, zero goals scored, seven goals conceded, five in the second half. It was just a good reminder of how hard it is to balance CCL and the regular season, especially at the start of the year. And like over the past 4 years, in 2018, CCL teams in MLS week one went 1-3-1. In 2019, they were 1-2-2. In 2020, that was an outlier. They went 4-1-0. 2021, last year, no wins, two losses, three draws, only two goals scored. So what the Union did last year, being competitive in the regular season, being competitive in the CCL all the way to the semifinals, you don't see that every year. It hurts to play in this competition for most teams. It's something to bear in mind. I don't know whether that means read nothing into these first week's results or read a whole lot into these first week's results, because three of the four teams I just talked about, even though I forgot two of them, three of the four teams I just talked about, like, they advanced. They're going to be playing more CCL teams, and that's going to be a big part of, I think, how they continue to look or continue to evolve over the next 6-8 weeks.
Real concern for you, Kalen, for these teams, or is this just early season blips? Focus split.
I mean, I think part of it also is who they were playing against a little bit. Some bad matchups as well, going against, I think, LAFC after a loss like that for Colorado. And then I think even Nashville, in the way that they frustrate teams. Orlando, just like some difficult, and then Portland put a lot in, even for New England to handle. So I think some of it was just tough matchups, but yeah, I mean, I think the numbers don't lie, right? It wasn't like a couple teams had some good results or bad ones. I think it's like, that's going to be something that we talk about. And, you know, Jozy Altidore came on this show and said, I want to see a team go all in on CCL and like really throw everything against the wall and just go all out for it. But you see the other side, right? Like, it's not easy to do at this point, because if you go all in on one, there's a cost at another. And I think we saw that in week one.
All right, let's get into it. Our lead story, LAFC, Carlos Vela. Speaking of CCL teams that got smacked, the Rapids were sort of, they were the example here, and Carlos Vela made an example of them, Dave. Three goals, PK, nice little finish in the box, and then a vintage left-footed, like, you're going to close me down, or you're not going to close me down? Oh, is the far post open? Okay, I'm going to put it in the far post, sort of goal for Vela, and you saw the reaction from his teammates, the respect that they have, the acknowledgement of his skill, the way their sideline reacted. When you are in a situation where your contract is in question, and it's not anymore, the question is whether or not he will re-sign. He said to LAFC.com, my contract's up in June. That's the deal. I would like to stay here. Taylor Twellman reporting now that there are going to be, he hopes, an announcement on that for a new contract. This was just vintage Vela. This is what we've been waiting for. It's why we always go back to LAFC and always go back to Carlos Vela, because despite the fact that sometimes he'll be injured, when he's not and he's on form, he's basically unstoppable.
Did Taylor say new contract or extension? I'm wondering if extension, I guess it is, means 2022. Means, because, like, how do you finish this
so
year?
He said,
are you long term an LAFC player?
He said 18 to 24 months. He specifically said he thinks it's going to happen within the next couple of weeks. And he said new contract extension for 18 to 24 months. Obviously, we don't know what the numbers will be either for the length or the money. But, you know,
boy, good timing from a negotiation standpoint for the length and the money to just drop a hat.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of and just forget a contract expire in the middle of the year. I mean, it's like,
it's really weird.
Can I speak to that?
I've never seen that.
If I was Carlos Vela or a DP in the MLS, I would try, who had European potential and interest and a history, I would be trying to have my contract up in the summer for maximum leverage.
Yeah, but no, that's why I guess. Yeah.
But if you're MLS, like, you don't do it.
World, I, yeah,
sure, but if you're Carlos Vela, table. You say, "Hey, you want me? Like, this is the deal."
Only maybe, you should also
you could get that.
You should also be an MLS player who has a player option instead of a team option. That would be a good idea too. I think there's a reason that it's not really possible, but. But when we talk about Vela, we talk about health, right? We don't talk about quality. We don't talk about commitment. We don't talk about how he can change the game. We just ask, will he be at 100%? Because if he is, this is who he is. This is who he's been every day he's been in MLS. When he's at this level, this is where he's sort of been over the last 10 years. And I think that's the exciting part. As a fan of this league and as someone who watches it consistently, you saw him feel comfortable and be able to do the things that he does at a high level. And you just see on the second goal, they win the ball back and immediately Cifuentes is like, if I can just get it to Vela, he's going to make something happen. I don't even need it to be the perfect pass. And then he just makes it happen from there. He's special. It was fun. I love that fall came in and did the shine your shoe celebration. Vela like didn't. He was like, no, dude, we're good. And it was like, no, I have to respect you in this way. I gotta shine your shoe. And it was awesome. And I think you saw like the 32-52 bouncing after the goal. Like it felt like Bank of California was sort of back for the first time in 2 years.
I love the idea that Carlos Vela has like his own CBA and he's just like going to LAFC afterwards and being like, congratulations, I've picked up your option.
I will take the 24-month variety. That's the one that I have chosen.
But no, I mean, even in the play where he gets played in behind, he almost has to wait for the ball a little bit. And Abubakar, I think, is coming up behind him. But he just has that kind of uncanny ability where with the ball he's almost able to hit another level, and the technique at top speed is so good to be able to kind of run in behind and get that finish. But even for LAFC, I mean, I tried to caution before last week when we were kind of leading up to week one to say, don't get too carried away, MLS fans or media or all of us on week one, right? Like, don't throw out, you know, Austin's probably not going to be like this every week. And but I'm finding myself leaning that way with LAFC and putting a lot into this. One, because of Vela and his performance. But I also just like the way the team is constructed. And I think the pieces that they brought in as well have a lot of MLS experience. So Ilya Sanchez came in. Then you also have Kellen, who came. Hollingshead came in very late.
Oh, you mean the best number six in MLS who played alongside a guy at six who wore number six?
Yeah. No, I think he can be a best 11 this year. We saw Hollingshead only come in very late. We saw Arango come in very late. Crepeau was not really tested the way we've seen him have to be in Vancouver last year. So I like the way, especially with a new manager, the way that they've gone out and got some experience. I think that was really savvy to go, because they've gone out and done most of their work, I'd say, in the international market, bringing up young, talented players for the most part in the past to bring in even on depth pieces. And now I'm seeing that little shift this year from LAFC, and so feeling pretty confident about where they're headed right now.
I thought Rodriguez was pretty lively in this game. as well. Had some good moments, 1v1, and then just the depth. You mentioned like going to the bench and it's Blessing and it's Arango, and like Rapids are looking across, being like, we wish we just had an Arango. Like, we don't even like, let alone off the bench, right? We wish we had a Musovski. Let alone you're bringing him off the bench. Like, to be real, maybe that could be our Baji from last year. And we'll talk more about the Rapids in that sense here in a second here. How do you think this Vela thing shakes out, though? Anybody have a prediction? 18, 24, does it feel safe to say he will be back, or are we still in guessing
zone? Why would you sign for 24 months? That would mean you're back in a situation where his contract's up in June again.
You
that
do
would
what
make
he
no
wants,
sense.
Goss. You do whatever he
fair.
Wants to keep him, right?
Yeah,
that's
fair.
Why I'm saying the roles of the you know, the structure is shifting.
That's leverage. That's what I'm saying.
It is. Yeah. And generally, we when Taylor says something, I feel like it's not just out of thin air, right? Like, he's done his homework and is on top of these things. So I was thinking, you know, Vela may be gone. But that sort of reporting during that match last night made me a lot more hopeful, just as somebody who wants to watch Vela as much as possible, that we're going to see him and see this best of this LAFC team. And if you're LAFC, you do what you can to hold on to this guy, because I think he's still got a ton. Like, you look for the next couple years. I mean, how long have we had players like this at this peak level for this long for one club, from start of their first day as an MLS team to like years going ahead? And that can get you through multiple managers. That can get you through some bad times to bring you back up pretty quickly. And I don't know. I'm as a fan of the league, I'm hopeful now. I hope that he sticks around, because this league still needs stars. And Vela, to me, is still him and Joseph, I would say, are one and two.
Nope, yeah, the list is the list is Joseph. The list of the expansion guys is Joseph, Chad Marshall, and Nick Haglund. Been there since day one, keeping it consistent.
Come on,
for
you don't even. I guess Dimadoff isn't around anymore. But if we're going with the hits, on
no.
But I would say for Carlos Vela, like, I'm sure the money will be good with the player of his talent and the leverage he has, and that's why you hear him talking about San Sebastian. I'm sure, though, that is very real for him and his family. You know, that's part of these processes. But they're still unfinished business. Like, yeah, they got the supporters' shield and set that record, and he was absolutely rampant, best individual season in league history. Yeah, they got the CCL final. They almost got it done. But right now, it's a little bit of almost. Like, you know, I don't know. Does he care about legacy? Does he care about winning MLS Cup? Does he care about all that? I'm sure he does. Like, he seems like a competitive guy, and he'll have to make a decision that also vibes for his family as well. So we'll see how that works out. I'm with you. I'm with you, Kaylin. I want him to be there. Doyle, the Rapids. It remains punchless. Like, it is it? We keep asking this, and we'll just ask it again.
Can I throw this out before you say this, go into the whole thing? I didn't think this game was they don't have a center forward. This game was like they didn't show up to play.
Mm-hmm.
They were not on the field. And that is actually scarier to me than Comunicaciones, which is they created chances they can't finish because they don't have a goal scorer. They looked like they did not know there was a game on Saturday afternoon in LA. Continue.
Yeah, okay. Can you excuse him for the emotional hangover in that sense then? And how big of an issue does the number nine remain?
I can excuse them. They lost a heartbreaker in about the eighth round of penalties in continental play at home where the other day. Or the, you know,
in a snowstorm?
Poured out all their energy at you know 5,200 feet. And it's 0% surprising that they would have a weekend performance as sort of limp as this one. So yeah, I still think there's some very good talent in this roster, and I think that Robin Fraser has proved over the past 2.5 years he's a really good coach. So I'm betting on them to figure it out. That said, as long as they don't have a real number nine on this team, there's a pretty hard ceiling on how high they can go, and I think we saw it last year. I don't think that they can have a better year than 2021 with this group. Now, if Jossie Zardes is suddenly available, right, then he would fit. You know, if Ola Kamara is still available, he would fit. And I think that just by having someone who is proven and dynamic and reliable in the 18, it can elevate the rest of the players on the field and give them kind of like a focal point for how you want your attack to go. And does that segue us into the next section, Weeby?
It does. And Columbus won 4-0 against Vancouver, and we got a lot of chatter saying, wait, were the Crew playing a game? I didn't see it in your column, in the show. You guys didn't really talk about that. Well, here we are talking about it. Jesse Zardes did not start for the Crew, and that's why Doyle's referencing, hey, is Jesse available? It sounds like he could be. It sounds like he probably wouldn't be the way Caleb's talking about, but money talks sometimes. The starter was Miguel. And I'm only calling him Miguel from now on. Miguel Barry made a choice. He said, I don't want Barry on my back. I'm a starting striker in this league. I'm Miguel. That's it. Put it on the back of my shirt. I love
and
the
he's
move
from Barcelona. He's from Barcelona, right?
I'm so guaranteeing double-digit goals for him. And it helps that he got a crazy deflected
one name
goal
is fine
to open his account. Yeah, it's all good.
Part of his culture.
Yeah, Jesse didn't start. Here are the quotes from Caleb Porter. Quote, I'd be silly not to play this kid Miguel Barry a lot of minutes this year. We have two very good strikers. That's a strength of this team, not a weakness. There's no controversy at all. Both are good guys. Both want to be in this club. Both want to play. Both are very professional, and they are about the team. Yeah, I read another quote basically saying, hey, I kind of owed it to him. Porter said he, quote, owed Barry this start after the way he finished 2021. Are we reading too much into this? Are we hoping for a trade for the Rapids and just throwing Jesse out as potential bait here, or could there be something bigger?
So I think for starters, Columbus was phenomenal in this game. They played aggressive. They played higher up the field. It didn't look like a Caleb Porter team, or at least didn't look like 2021 Crew. They changed a lot of things they had to. Arthur looked fully fit. Yeboah fit in pretty well, and Miguel played well. So I think that's the starting point, is like, you're not going to have a conversation like this if they struggled, right? Because Zardes is back in the team. They didn't. I think, to me, the biggest thing that comes out of this is Jesse Zardes has, someone do math for me, 8 months to get himself on a plane to the World Cup if the U.S. qualifies in the final window. This is the only World Cup he will ever go to, right? They didn't qualify last time. This is probably it for him in terms of his career. And so if he's not playing full time, then I wouldn't even fault him for coming and saying, if someone else wants to play me, I want to go. And I think what Caleb Porter said is true. Like, Jesse Zardes has proven in his career, he will do whatever to help his team win. He played right back. Like, he will do whatever he has to help his team win. I think now is a fair time for him to not be selfish, but to focus on his career and say, if this is an experience I want. And not everyone will move for that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if he isn't, if he's splitting time, not that he's not playing, that is a reasonable time to go and say, Colorado wants me to start. KC wants me to start. I need to go and get minutes so that I can contend against DK, Pepe, Sargent, Josie, I don't know, whoever else you want to pull out of thin air in that conversation.
I don't know that Kansas City would be a viable destination based on cap. Would it be on sporting reasons? For sure. And we'll talk about Kansas City more later, but the Rapids, that would seem to fit, Kalen. And again, we're speculating. Because he's got a life in Columbus. He's got a history with the club. There's no reason to think after 1 week that his starting spot is just poof evaporated. He's never going to get it back. It may be just that he walks right back into it and picks up where he left off.
I would be shocked if Jesse Zardes was traded. I would be completely shocked. Now, if you want to tell me Miguel Barry might be picked up by somebody, I could see somebody coming, one of those same teams you're mentioning, and saying, hey, like, give us this guy. But I think even if you're going to compete for the way, you know, I guess to get back in the playoffs in Columbus's case, but if you know, with Jesse being gone for World Cup qualifiers and things like that, you need to have multiple strikers. I just think this is a little bit caught up in the moment of match day one and someone getting, you know, someone with a big recognizable name not being in the starting lineup. But I don't think Jossi's the type that's going to overreact to that or walk into the coach's office and saying I need to come out. So I'd be pretty shocked if this has any kind of legs at all.
If I was going to trade, and this is not a knock on Jossi at all, it's an indication of his value. But if I was the Crew and I was going to trade anybody, it would be Jossi, because he occupies a DP spot and because he's 6 years older. And because his production last year, 9 goals in 1,500 minutes is good, but Barry had 8 and 840. Like, that allows you to go reinvest with a roster spot in a different way, and the Crew have shown they've been willing to do that in other ways. And he probably has, I don't know, maybe he doesn't have more value than Miguel Barry. But you would think, he could fetch. You would think this would be a solidly seven figures up to maybe challenging, you know, that Paul Ariola number. I mean, am I crazy to think that that would be in that range?
I would think 1.5 to 2 million GAM for Jossie. I wouldn't, if I was Columbus, I would seriously consider it, because the GAM would give you roster flexibility, and the, you know, the opening a DP slot would give you cap flexibility. And then, like, I mean, Jossie's great in the locker room. He's been really good on the field for a long time. Barry's entering his prime. He scores the exact same types of goals that Jossie does. It's tough for me to see them playing both at the same time. That's not to say that Columbus has to trade Jossie by any stretch. Like, I understand the value in hanging on to both of them, but, like, this is a salary cap league, and sometimes in a salary cap league, you have to be ruthless about these decisions. And to bring it back to David's point, from Jossie's perspective, it might just be the best thing for him, if he's going to make this World Cup, to go to a place where he's going to start and play 90 minutes every single week. And I think he would in Colorado.
I appreciate that first game of the season, Columbus gets a 4-0 win. Caleb comes out after, says no controversy. And then we spend the entire show creating a controversy.
We didn't create anything. We're just discussing possibilities here, all right? Sure. We're just, hey, we're just could, hey,
we're
maybe.
We're just in our LA Galaxy jerseys analyzing it.
Exactly. Kerry Morty, bring it back to the crew. Does this Columbus performance change your view about where you predicted? Some predicted as low as 10th in the East this season in LessSoccer.com. And Corbin Williams says Columbus is a top five team in the league if they can stay healthy. Yeah. Is this a return to 2021 crew predictions? Can we talk ourselves back into where we were last year? Or at least somewhere
gonna,
close
I'm
to
not going
to
be that high on them. But, like, they looked really good. They tore Vancouver apart. The game plan was really good. Yeboah had a ton of time and you know, made it work for him. Derek Etienne, I thought, was more dangerous on the wing than he had been last year. And Artur being back, like, he infuses that whole team with energy. So I'm more positive on them than I was 3 days ago. But, like, they're still a mystery box to me. There's, like, Vancouver was really poor in this game. They were playing a lot of backups.
Vancouver, by the way.
Yeah, and they were playing a lot of backups out there.
10-man in, like, the 70th minute.
No, it was the 53rd minute.
It was already 2-0.
It was 2-0. It was 2-0.
They blew them out in the first half.
So,
just giving you some Vancouver context. Come on, I'm just trying to protect Vanni Sartini a little bit here. Like, you know,
I don't think there's that much context for them. They got wiped in this one.
Okay, that's enough context for Vancouver. Better luck next
Columbus
time.
Columbus looked really good, and I think that they looked squarely a playoff team to me. I do think there was some concern around Vancouver, and it's a question that I've been kind of asking a little bit: is how does Sartini remake this team? They played three in the back, right? Which something they've done before, but they brought in Blackman. It looked disjointed at times. The first goal, Barry turns a little bit too easily. It takes a deflection. Unlucky. They downgraded a little bit, I would say, from Crapo to Hassall, who doesn't, you know, it's hard to put it on him because of the deflection, but also, I thought he maybe could have gotten to that one. And then also, Blackman gets caught over pretty far on, tucked into the inside on the second goal where Etienne kind of walks in. So still some question marks for me, especially around the back line and with the goalkeeper position, with the changes that have happened with Vancouver. And then also my question around Vancouver as well is, it's one thing when you come in late in a season as a manager and you bring that energy and you bring that passion, you get that sense of belief. And it's a very different thing going into year two, where you really have to kind of, like, work through the system. You have to change some pieces. You have to implement a style, and you have to do it over the course of a full season. So I still think Vancouver has a ton of talent, but and Brian White also didn't play in this one. But I think changing some of those changes still have some question marks. I learned a lot about Columbus to feel good, but I also have maybe even some bigger questions about Vancouver.
Colorado's looking for a striker. I think Lucas Cavallini might be available for
just go around the league, try to figure that one out. Brian White, not in this game. Hurt, Galaxy 1, NYCFC 0. This looked destined for a scoreless draw until Chicharito did Chicharito things. Shows up in the leisure shirt with the purple pants. Just the incredible vibes to begin the season. And the exact same vibes post-game with Jillian Sackvitz, by the way. Loved seeing her on the ESPN broadcast. That was awesome. But
the
Chicharito is doing... the call-up just out here just moving. We move. But man, Chicharito post game after scoring a game winner is always inspirational, always spreading the love, always saying, not me, we with the Galaxy. Look at this performance from
said,
the boys.
Chicharito.
Bring him in.
He'd use a third person. I love that. That's when you really want to be humble.
It's wonderful, man. But the goal is brilliant. The goal is like, it's a perfect week one moment. Defending MLS Cup champions, NYCFC, in town. Of course, we're already in town for CCL. Coming down to the final breath, Chicharito's been mostly anonymous throughout the game. Had one sort of snapshot on goal that was pretty impressive, but that was about it. And then here he is. He pops up. Doyle, this is what they pay him the money to do. It's why I picked him for Golden Boot. This is just, he has a knack for it.
He does. And I'll go back to what I was saying last week on this show. It's not how many goals he scores. It's how many minutes they can get out of him. Because as long as he's out there, the Galaxy are going to be dangerous. I think they're going to be on the front foot more when he's out there. And we saw over the final 20 minutes, because the Galaxy were grinding NYCFC down, and then they started pressing him over the final 20 minutes of the game. And that's actually what this goal comes off of. Like, Galaxy just throwing, you know, numbers forward, putting NYCFC on the back foot, you know, causing a turnover. And Raheem Edwards was just a lovely little slip pass. And if you can get Chicharito into those positions, he's going to hurt people. And he hurt Maxime Cheneau, just cut him preki style and then roofed it. It was really, really impressive from the Galaxy, because they didn't look gappy. They didn't look flimsy through central midfield. And even on the back line, there were a couple of mistakes. I think Nick Depew fell asleep a couple of times. But like, even so, they just looked harder to play against. And if you have that with Chicharito out there and with, you know, Douglas Costa, who, you know, wasn't great in this one, but you could see the moments of individual quality. This is a team... Like, it's like the Crew. I don't want to get too high on them after week one, but you saw a lot of the stuff in this roster that makes you think it's not just a mystery box. It's a high upside mystery box. It's a mystery box that, like, you could really talk yourself into this team putting up 60 points, 63 points over the course of the year and being the type that, like, nobody wants to face once the playoffs come.
And to
I can
Doyle's
also talk
point,
myself
I think
into the other side still.
For sure. But I think to Doyle's point, and what stood out to me was the first 20, 25 minutes, I thought there was a couple openings and it was like NYCFC is going to tear them apart. They didn't. And those final 20 minutes when the Galaxy pushed and attacked and pressed, I don't think that the attack would have the confidence to do that last year because they know what's behind them. And so it just felt like with Delgado and Revelison in that midfield, there was the confidence that they could step forward. They could be on the front foot and they weren't 100% going to lose. And I don't know that the Galaxy were capable of that last year. And that was a big change to me. And that's without, if Derek Williams is really the starter when he's healthy, whatever it is. And, you know, there might be other pieces along that back line that improve them. But I thought you saw the presence of Delgado. I thought you saw that connection in central midfield add to what the attackers can do, the freedom that they had in the game.
Yeah, I was going to just only to add, just I thought LA would need to win this game like 3-2 last year or 2-1 or something. This was a game where I was like, can they actually hold a zero against NYCFC? This is the defending champions. And yes, I know they've been in Champions League, but Tati, Golden Boot winner, I think he had one really good look where he kind of gets in behind with the header that goes just wide. But for the most part, they were strong in the back. And I think some of the subs and the changes that came in, I thought Sasha came in and did a good job getting on the ball. Cabral seemed to get stronger as the game went on. Efra came in. But they started to apply that pressure. And so I think it was a big step forward for the Galaxy to get that late winner, of course, but also maybe more than anything to hold a zero against NYCFC. That was impressive. And I think a step forward for... The way that Vanny's talked about wanting to have this team and showing that they can win a game like this, even understanding the circumstances and playing at home and NYCFC being in CCL, I still think it was a huge, huge win for them.
Early 2021 vibes on this one with Chicharito heroics, with just a just kind of a glow around the stadium. Douglas Costa with his debut, as we said here, you know, he's smooth, he's slick. You knew he is. Technically, he's brilliant. The question is production, and I don't think he's played a preseason game, so we'll let him ease in and evaluate him as he goes. Jun Araujo might be hearing something. I don't know, maybe not. Possible red card in this one. We covered it ad nauseum on Instant Replay, presented by Cheez-It, if you want to go check that out. Charlie and I both with our takes on that, as well as the Pool Reporter. Coming up clutch, getting a good answer from referee Joseph Dickerson about what they saw on that play.
What's the swag on Cheez-Its that you got? Because I love Cheez-Its.
I don't know if you can claim that. We have Kalen Carr here in this podcast right now, and I don't know that anybody ate more free Cheez-Its.
I thought Kalen was a Pop Chips guy, or is that Doyle? No, Doyle was the Pop Chips guy.
Yeah, no, Kalen's a Cheez-It man.
When we were in the
studio, I love Cheez-Its.
It was bad. That's the only positive of the studio shutting down was taking me away from those Cheez-Its.
Caleb's the only person who lost weight in quarantine because he had no Cheez-Its available.
That definitely didn't happen, but boy, that was a time. Yeah.
Wow. So I just have Pavlovian response to studio. I'm drooling right now thinking about Anders' mom's chocolate chip cookies and eating like three of them straight frozen for lunch out of the freezer every single day. That was a healthy lifestyle that we were leading around those times. Portland Timbers, New England, Big Fox on Saturday night. Matt Turner did not play in this game out with an injury. And it looked like New England was going to pull it out until Jimmy Chara came and had himself a AT&T Goal of the Year candidate. Got on his bike, found the bottom corner. Well done to that one. What did you make of this game overall, Doyle? Two teams with ambitions. Certainly, I think in the East, New England's maybe a little bit more crystallized, but Portland just got to an MLS Cup final, just hosted it.
I mean, they had no answers last year when Sebastian Blanco didn't play. And Sebastian Blanco, he did play in this one, but it was only the final 10 minutes. In this one, they had answers going forward, even when he was not on the field, because Santi Moreno, playing that right winger, and he's an old-fashioned winger in some ways because he starts with chalk on his boots, but then he will come inside and be a playmaker, except he's not an inverted playmaker. He's right-footed guy, but he's still so comfortable coming inside from the right and playmaking through zone 14. And so, like, they were able to at times really overwhelm the Revs in that part of the field in a way that was similar to how NYCFC did it in the playoffs last year, how Columbus did it in the playoffs the year before that, and like that shows some good game planning. But I think that Moreno having that ability and being that type of talent makes me think that the floor for this team, if Blanco can only play 1,200 minutes this year, the floor is higher than I thought it was. And that is, I think that is a massive relief from week one if you're a Portland fan. And like, this is obviously, it's a one-off, so you know, maybe it doesn't mean as much as I'm saying, but also like, he had 4 assists in 350 minutes last year. This is one of those U22 signings who, as soon as it happened, front office types from other teams were hitting my DMs and hitting my texts like, yeah, this guy's really good. Portland got a good one right here, and he's showing that. And so just like that level of urgency, because like they were just abysmal without Blanco last year, that level of urgency being ameliorated at least a little bit is huge for this Timbers team. Though I think it is fair to worry once again about their set piece defense. They gave up one. They could have given up two others in this one. The Revs, I still have questions about the way they set up. I don't like that wide diamond. I think it asks too much of one guy. And teams are, you know, kind of savvy to that now. But they're still so good going forwards that they can go on the road and get a 2-2 and, you know, take your point and go back home happy.
So I think this, I agree with you on the set piece defending, but if you take that out, I actually think on top of Moreno, the other huge question mark to me this year was goalkeeper and then two aging center backs. And for McGraw and Tuiloma in the run of play to only give up the one goal to an unbelievable finish from Legette, and I didn't think they were exposed a ton, I thought that convinces me about their floor. Because I would be shocked They're not going to get the production out of Gold that they got from out of Steve Clark last year. I'd be surprised. I'd be shocked if Mabial and Zuparic play, you know, the two of them both play over 2,800 minutes. Like, they're just over the age of 30 center backs. And we haven't seen Tui Loma or McGraw in the few minutes look like they were MLS starting capable center backs. So I thought that was a huge part of what I saw from Portland. And I agree with you on the attack. The attack is good enough that if Blanco's out, they can still be good. If the defense holds up, they're not going to put up four every game without Blanco on the field. And that was a huge question mark coming into the year. And I thought this was a really good first step for them, even in giving up two goals to a team coming cross country.
I just want to encourage everyone to watch the Revs, just to watch them for Carlos Heel. I mean, I feel like we've beaten this one into the ground over the course of the last year and a half, certainly over the last year, 2 years. He just remains a joy to watch as sort of that player that they're just always going to find in that little half space or in the midfield who can turn out. And the way that he paces and plays and shapes and times balls, especially into those like on-rushing fullbacks, and it was the Tejan role before, and Icy Dewan and Brandon Bai doing it, it is perfection. He is so good, so productive, so many chances flow directly through him. And you saw that repeatedly in this game. And you see Legit get an opening goal, Kalen, and that's a good start for them. Here's a rumor for you, since we're in the rumor business. We know we are. Doug McIntyre says Ethan Horvath could be the Turner replacement in the summer. What do you think about that?
I don't know. Earl Edwards had a pretty standout day, I would say.
He did.
It was going to take a bicycle kick to beat him, it seemed like, at certain points.
He was great.
You know, he might have something to say about that as time goes on, and definitely had a big opening day for them in a tough environment. I was actually sitting with him at MLS Cup randomly, so it's kind of funny to watch him down there having to take on Timber's Army in a different light. But yeah, anyways, I think also to get back to your Carlos Heel point, I think Sebastian Legette is going to work really well with him because I think at times Carlos has always looked for those, you know, those kind of, he can play those killer balls or longer ones, but I think sometimes just someone to play with a little bit more throughout the run of play, just in possession, to kind of knock it to him, give it right back. Legit was able to do that a number of times. And then I think also there are times where New England lacked a little bit of a late arriving run, exactly like we saw on the Legit goal, coming from the middle of the park. Because Carlos Heel likes to drift to different sides. He often finds himself isolated out wide, serving in balls, creating overloads. That's what he does. But then you kind of need someone to fill that space from the middle. And Polster is going to be more of a guy that's going to be protecting and holding. And then I think even McNamara as well is not going to be always the guy that's going to kind of really make that gut-busting run to get into the box and finish the action. So I thought that that role for Legit was really good. I think a change of scenery will suit him, a new challenge. He's got the World Cup roster to try and fight for as well, too. And then the tidy finish as well to finish. So that was good. Portland stood out. I thought really impressed by them coming back twice. New England's not a team that lets you back into games. And then the Sebastian Blanco one worries me a little bit. I still feel great about, like, or I was impressed by what they did. But I don't know. I'm worried about him. I hope they give him some time to really get healthy and come in. Because just coming in late in the game, long, late season, he put a ton into getting back last year. So I think they're going to have to be a little bit slow with him. I don't like seeing that K-tape. If you look at, I don't know what the underlying numbers are as far as like how much K-tape you see in MLS if you're watching games week to week, but that's like generally a later in the season type thing you'll see more often on every player. But I think it's tough because you're still licking some wounds from last year if you went all the way to Cup.
K-tape, for those of you who are wondering what the hell that might be, is when you see a player who has the tape on their muscles to sort of help them in a recovery or help them with an injury or an imbalance they may be having. That's what that's for. So we had a question real quick. Jonathan Baldari asked, when it's time for Blanco's full return, who goes to the bench, Moreno or Espria? Jimmy Chara, is there a name that you would throw out there?
What did I say on Friday? Right? Remember
gonna,
we did the Twitch watch along?
Don't do it.
I'm just saying, we watched the Twitch watch along and someone asked us what Espria would do this year, and you guys were both like, oh yeah, he's going to have a great year. He's the locked in starter, and I don't think so.
You didn't like that goal? You didn't like his goal? What do you want? What more do you want from him?
Fair, but then that might be at center forward.
That's fair too. Niche starting in this game. By the
what
way, let's
ball.
Go to Atlanta.
I think we
Sporting.
Talked about it, that ball though from Moreno too.
Yeah, that little the little ball. Flick, little the way he pulls it up off the ground right yeah. to fall into the path for an easy touch and finish. And Asprilla made it look easy. It's not that easy, but.
Atlanta, can I give you a little right now just to give you like that boost you need halfway through the show?
Oh yeah, man.
Rumors out that the LA Galaxy are looking at Sergio Ramos as a potential.
Oh, come on. I already saw that. They don't have the DP spot. Not that that's ever mattered before.
Who needs a DP spot when you can live in Venice, baby? That's the DP acquisition right there.
Just sell him. Zlatan on TAM. Sergio, you look like a TAM player. If Zlatan's TAM, you're TAM, my man. All right. Atlanta Sporting Kansas City. Luis Araujo, he is not TAM. He's a DP. He had a beautiful goal to start things off for the five stripes, and then he pulled up immediately with the hammy. That's not great. We'll see what happens with that. I think a hammy. I mean, he was getting it like he had heat or cool or something on that on the bench. That's a bummer. But then Dom Dwyer comes in, and Dom Dwyer hasn't scored a goal since September 2019. I mean, it is pre-pandemic for Dom Dwyer as it pertains to MLS goals. And he gets a beautiful left footer. You got to ask Andreu Fontas why in the world he would ever let Dom Dwyer get back to his left foot in that position. But Dom did him. And Dom put it in the goal. Had some other chances. They finished it off with Caleb Wiley at the end, who we'll talk about in a second for our 2222 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor. But, yeah, this five stripes don't stop. They were flying high, Doyle, on Twitter, as you might expect, after this result against Kansas City. Were they right to be flying as high as they were?
They should be pretty happy. I mean, this is a team that had, I think, one win against a playoff team in all of 2021. And like, even though Sporting Kansas City looked really poor in this one, I think they're still probably going to be a playoff team this year. So I think there's reason to be happy with that. Atlanta basically didn't have their starting central midfield. They still, I think, controlled most of the game, even though they weren't like dominating possession. They still controlled most of the game. They have a lot of reasons to be happy with that. Alan Franco wasn't out there. They got a great 90 minutes from young George Campbell. Brooks Lennon couldn't start. They got solid replacement minutes at right back there. So like, they ended up checking a lot of boxes. I didn't think Joseph looked great. He looked maybe a little bit fitter than last year. And if that's the case, I think that's a little bit of a worry. But I thought, like, in general, Gonzalo Pineda came out with a really, I think, smart game plan. This is a team that was going to hit Sporting Kansas City in transition, because why would you ever do anything else? And then selective pressure. And he straight up said afterwards, I think Felipe was talking it on your MLS After Dark last night, Weeby. He straight up said afterwards that like we were happy to give up possession in this one, because we knew that if we did that, Sporting would come upfield and we could get at them on the run. And lo and behold, they scored their second and third goals, came completely on the run as Sporting KC came upfield. So I thought it was a good game plan. I thought a team full of, you know, at least half full of backups executed it well. There's a lot to be happy about if you're an Atlanta United fan this morning. Though, like, as with everyone, there's a couple of things to be concerned about as well.
Dave, have you workshopped your Weeby impression to rub it in, the Fontas and Defender of the Year? And I'm just going to get this out before you can get it out there. I mean,
he should have been wearing one of those orange cone jerseys that Cincinnati's defenders had on.
That's really tough to be a team in orange if you're Cincinnati. That joke makes itself. Yeah, cement boots moments for Fontas. How concerned would you be about Sporting Kansas City? Peter Vermees basically afterwards said, yeah, we had good moments. And I agree with him. They had some good moments. They had sometimes where I thought, okay, well, they're going to create a good goal scoring chance here, or you're in a good position and they just didn't quite have the timing, etc. But he said, look, it was individual mistakes that killed us. What'd you make of this performance from them?
I don't think it changes a lot about my perception of this team, right? They're a high possession team, but they have these openings in transition. I don't think that's going to change with Uri Rossell in the group. The hope was Jose Mari would be that guy, and he came in because of Rossell's injury. This is a tough setting. I think only two teams went on the road and won. You're going in front of 65K. You're going up against Atlanta at home. And as Doyle said, I thought they played on the front foot. They played direct, which they hadn't done under Heinsohn and DeBoer. And so it's sort of tough to game plan for and tough to prepare for and deal with. There's limitations to what SKC is. You saw all of them, right? Fontas' inability to defend 1v1, Kyrie Shelton's inability to take advantage of dangerous moments or to make himself a threat to force center backs to make harder decisions. Those are all things that stand out about this team, and you saw them. At the same time, they went and lost 2-1. Like, they're that close to everyone in MLS when they're on and when they want to be. I felt the same coming out of this game. Russell and Shallowy are each going to have to put up 15 goals. That was true a week ago, and it's still true now. And there's still question marks along that back line at time, but there is overwhelming talent. There is a true identity to this team. I thought Ndembe looked very good as an addition and an upgrade at left.
By the way, welcome to MLS, Logan Ndembe.
Yeah.
Here comes Ozzy with the Uber scissor orange card.
And he was gone too on that play. Like, you could see in his head, he was like, I'm in on goal. And Ozzy's like,
what he didn't know is there was a heat seeking missile who was also thinking he's in on goal, and I cannot allow that possibility to manifest itself.
So yeah, I don't feel like the SKC performance changes any of that for me. I just think that's unfortunate for SKC.
Should we do the 2022 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor?
Let's do
We've hit the sponsor plug, so we got to do it. 17-year-old Caleb Wiley, who you've heard about on this show. We're always early to these things, folks. You figured this out by now. Ricardo Pepi, Caleb Wiley, et cetera, et cetera. His debut for Atlanta United, Atlanta, Georgia, born and bred. He scores the third goal, 3-1, Kalen, on the break. We've all watched the video, and if you haven't already, go to Atlanta United Twitter. Of sort of a splice in of him scoring the goal and his parents experiencing that moment. And you see just the emotion, the pride, the sort of recognition of, oh my God, this is happening in front of us right now. I mean, his father sort of doubling over. You see his mom like rubbing his dad's back, being like, well, you know, I could only imagine. Have I ever mentioned that I have? No, I'm just kidding. But this is a great moment, man. These are the moments that really make me love MLS, to see a kid like that get an opportunity and to get a memory that he'll have forever.
Yeah, no, it's nice.
It's the moment. Yeah. Go ahead, Kalen.
No, you got it.
No, I was going to say, it's a moment that, from day one watching this league, you just hope that the league can eventually develop kids who grew up with the team, who dreamed of playing for the team, their local team, and your fans in the your neighbors in the stands, and having that in front of them and in front of 50,000 people in the stadium on national TV. We've had a lot of those now over the past 10 years. We didn't used to have them, and then now over the last 10 years, and then especially over the last 3 or 4, we've gotten more and more of them, and it's wonderful to see. It's what I dreamed of seeing when MLS was founded almost 30 years ago, and it's here, and we're getting just about every week from some teenager or another, and it's still magical, and I hope I don't ever lose that sort of romantic vision of it, because I hope I get to see it every week, but I hope it doesn't ever start to feel commonplace, you know?
Could have been you, Kalen. We talked about it on Twitch on Friday, man. Could have been you. Get you in the academy at 17, bro. For the Quakes, you would have been flying.
I
know you had that pace.
I sacrificed for Caleb, Caden, Cade,
Noah, Tyler.
All the future All C's. Generations of the C's invading MLS now. I love it. Now, it was a really nice moment with his family, and I think Atlanta as well, like, beginning to develop more talent. And I really liked the idea that Pineda said afterwards, where it's like easy to debut a guy. It's easy to give a guy his debut. It's incredible that he scored on his debut and on opening day and in front of that record crowd for MLS this weekend. But it was just, I think, yeah, now the next part is like, how does he push that forward, right? And he's, if you think of, like, I think he's traditionally more of an outside back. Is that right? He's just, he was pushed a little bit higher up in this game. But I mean, even if you look around at, you know, who he would have had his influences to see what happened to George Bello and his career and how that's come up. Gutman, I thought, was great in this one as well. But then even if you look at some of the, you know, veterans to watch, you have Joseph Martinez, you have Dom Dwyer, you have a bunch of guys that can really help you push your career along. And so that's a really good part, because it's not just about all the young talent coming in is really big, and seeing guys come through the system and get sold and move on is like really aspirational. But I think being exposed to that type of environment as well at a young age and to be able to thrive in it says a lot about Caleb. So I was really impressed, and you know, I think we'll see how he carries it forward.
Can I add one more little thing? Because we're talking about Academy, so I'm going to throw it in there. We've talked a lot about FC Dallas. We've talked a lot about Philly. And I think Philly sits in a unique spot. We have not seen yet really these quote-unquote the biggest clubs. They've spent money on the Academy, and the purpose of that is to fill in that first team roster. Right, homegrown players hit the cap in a different way. And if you're spending X millions of dollars on Thiago Almada and Lorenzo Insigne and Chicharito, you need ways to fill out your roster. And I don't think we've seen a team really maximize that yet. And that's what's exciting about this is this isn't just, yeah, George Bello came through and then you sell him and it's about making money. It's about winning championships. And I think that's what you see when you hear TFC say Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy cost $20 million. It is... We think he helps us win now, so unless you blow us out of the water, we want him to play on our team, and he can help our team. And I think you saw that with George Campbell's performance in this game. Caleb Wiley coming in, obviously Araujo in L.A., Jaquiel, we'll talk about Jaden Nelson, all of these guys in Toronto. That's a different way of using your academy. These clubs are spending as much as Dallas is and Philly is on the academy. They haven't hit there yet, and it's a different way to use it, but... That's the most important thing for MLS is have a ton of clubs with different identities that are maximizing all the different resources they can have. And I think that's what was really exciting for me about what happened this weekend across the league.
Tyler Wolf, I don't know if we mentioned him, also getting a start for Atlanta United. There was a 17-year-old outside of Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy, who we will talk about in a second, who got a start as well at outside back. Noah Allen, 17 years old, doesn't even have a headshot on MLSsoccer.com, got the start for Inter Miami. We've waited this long to talk Seattle. It was predictable you go LAFC first, and if you had that on your bingo card, congratulations to you. We'll see how many times we lead the show with Carlos Vela and LAFC this year. Seattle, Nashville. Nashville with the late goal. Anibal Godoy, well done. A goal made in CONCACAF. Randall Leal with the cross. Not exactly an XG extravaganza in this one. Was a little, I was very excited for this game, and it was a little bit of a tough watch, not gonna lie. It was at like 0.3 to 0.3 when they got this goal. Congratulations to Nashville. I think this is what, you know, this is a game that maybe you expect them to draw 0-0 last year, you know, to go to a conversation we had last time and to say, hey, you go on the road first time to Seattle, but they took advantage of their moment. They got the finish. They're very difficult to break down. They're extremely organized. Sounders never really looked like they were going to do it. Now, Sounders didn't start Rui Diaz, and Ladero came off the bench at halftime, but Jordan Morris had a very anonymous game, and the Sounders didn't really look like they were... I don't know. The quotes afterwards were sort of like, hey, things are still clicking. This is after they just won 5-0 in CCL. Like, we're not quite there yet. We don't have the chemistry. Something's a little bit missing. Anybody have a take on the Sounders and what we saw in this game and by whether how much it matters? I know that Anders filled our group chat with some...
Anders was spitting fire last night.
Real, I don't know if we could call it slander. I don't know if it goes into that category legally. But he was heated up. He was not happy last night. Anybody have a thought on the Sounders?
Yeah, they moved the ball really slowly, and I think that is maybe part of the chemistry that they were, you know, referencing afterwards. When you're playing a narrow diamond, which is what Nashville came out in, right? They played a 4-4-2 with Dax McCarty as D mid, and then Godoy and Sean Davis as shuttlers, and you know, it was basically saying like we are happy to just keep a 0-0 here, which is fine. That's what you want to do on the road against a good you know, a good team like the Sounders. But you have to, against a diamond like that, you have to pull them side to side. You just have to make them, make those midfielders do 40-yard sprint after 40-yard sprint after 40-yard sprint and, like, wear them out, let the ball do the work. And Seattle wasn't really able to do that. Part of it was, I mean, they had Jordan Morris playing left winger, and he's pinching in so far that it was essentially a 4-4-2 from Seattle with Nuhu pushing up from left back and providing all the width. And, like, Nuhu's good in a lot of ways. He's not scaring anybody when he pushes into attack. So I think there were some, you know, there were some issues there. But at the same time, it's, we know how CCL teams did this weekend. Seattle, the more important game was that home game versus Motagua, and they got the job done there. They're still, you know, one of the two most talented teams in the league, as far as I'm concerned. And Nashville's really good. Nashville's played 33 road games in MLS. They've posted 15 shutouts. That's absurd. And that shout out to our guy Ben Wright for digging that one up.
So, are they serious Shield contenders? We had Locomotive Crayon Flag FC hit us up.
I don't think
and
so.
Ask that.
I don't think so. I still don't think they have enough punch. They don't have enough ways to hurt you going forward. And I'm not convinced that their set piece woes defensively are a thing of the past. If they address one of those two, then they are. But, like, it, you know, one game is not enough to convince me otherwise, one way or the other.
I also think now CCL throws a wrench in this because, yeah, if teams that are in CCL struggle, you're talking about NYCFC, Revs, and Seattle. Those are probably three of the favorites for the Shield. I just think the way your schedule lines up, having this late, you know, stadium opener, I just think it's too tough to put together a 70-point season or whatever it's going to take to win Supporters Shield nowadays. And that's not saying that Nashville can't get good results on the road to open. And that's not saying that then having a bunch of games at home isn't good. But what we've seen in the past is just, it's hard for teams to take full advantage of that. And so while Nashville, I think, has the quality to be in a conversation with all those teams, I just think this year is going to be a little bit too tough of a layout for them to push and challenge for that. But they, you could argue they stole 2 points last night. And that's the perfect way to start this run, where now you sort of have house money to play with as you go forward into the end of this away streak.
Going on the road.
All right, let's talk.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I felt like going on the road and starting with a win will be huge for them because they're going to be on the road for a while, and the formula is right there. And I thought adding Sean Davis, we saw him come into the team, and him, Dax, and Godoy were excellent in the middle of the pitch and make it really, really difficult. And then you saw Teal Bunbury, who they just added. He came in and pushed to get him behind, actually, and Fry then makes the save, but then it kind of comes back around, and then Godoy gets forward for the winner. So I really like the way this Nashville team is set up. I think they can go on the road and do what they do, which is get draws and then take them if they're there, and then take the wins if there's even more coming from that. So I was concerned about their transition to the West, but I'm actually feeling more and more good about the fact that they're going to go on this road trip, and they are one of the best teams in MLS to be prepared for this type of start to the season. I think they're going to come away with a lot of points. I don't know if it's going to always automatically transition to a Supporter Shield winning run at home when they get back, because it's not always so simple. But yeah, I think they're in a good spot to be in and near the top of the West around. I don't know if it'll be necessarily that part, but I think they can fight for it.
No, I think they could be Shield contenders, by the way.
No Ake Loba, by the way. How do we feel about that? David, how do you feel about that?
Did he came off the bench.
Did he come in? Yeah. Oh, he came in for the last 10 minutes?
Yeah, he came in late.
Well, but still, like,
he's not the starter, yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough. He's not the starter.
I don't think Gary Smith is ever gonna prefer a lineup without a true center forward. And he's not, like, a target man, you know? And Ake Loba's not that. So he's now fighting for minutes with Mukhtar and I guess to a lesser extent Leal.
Yeah, I think he's the answer when you give Hani rest. That's where he's kind of going to find his minutes, and then can he get goals and get a little bit of confidence? I thought Hani looked really good also yesterday, because there's a question, can he keep up that level? And he was dangerous, he was active. But yeah, it feels like, especially even like going out and getting Zubac, is like he's got to have a big dude that someone else is coming off of, no matter what their name is and who it is. And it's going to be tough for Loba, but the ceiling for this team is with Ake Loba being a factor. And I think with the money they put into him, Gary Smith's as aware of that as anyone. And so he's going to have to find his minutes. Will they be road games? I don't know. Is it sort of a slow start for him? And then he gets a bunch of minutes when they pack in the home games once they open up in May. That might sort of be the way his season goes.
A real test of the David Goss theorem we have here with Ake
halfway
Loba.
Though came halfway last season, so maybe we got a little wiggle room.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. So you're saying from like June, July on, it's a full
from June
year. It's
to
a
2023
year. It's not the second season. It is the second year. That's how we do this.
It's 22 under 22 rules.
Okay, I think Nashville have a chance at it. Their road form and their ability defensively on the road will give them a chance. I actually think it's the home form that would hold them back from a Shield run. You have to be rampant at home. And last year, they drew more games than they won at home, so they need to turn that around. They'd have to turn the new building into an absolute fortress, like a three-point fortress. Kaylin, give me your thoughts on Shaqiri's debut. He went 90. He had, like, what? He had 0.42 expected assists, and he had that one, as Doyle coined, thunder that was saved.
He called it a what?
I never heard that before.
Really? Oh, that's a Matt Letissier special is what they would call those.
He looked, we got a siren coming by.
No, don't apologize for sirens. That means something. There's something underneath the surface here whenever we hear a siren.
Yeah, I thought it was a fine result for the Fire and Inter Miami. But I would say from Shaqiri perspective, he didn't look great to me. He looked a little bit rusty. I would also say the same with Douglas Costa at LA Galaxy, where you can see the quality is there from both of them, right? But it's just like that little bit of game fitness or sharpness or just really lack of like context, like not really understanding the league. And I think specifically for guys that like to dribble a little bit or like to have their touches or want to beat guys one-on-one, that match fitness or understanding of even matchups, who you're going against. There were a couple times where I think Shaqiri gets like a nice little meg off, but then there's two or three guys around him or wasn't expecting pressure when there was. Same with Douglas Costa as well. So I think both will be impact players. The quality is for sure there, but it might take a little bit of time to really get your legs underneath you. And it's different than just being like a goal poacher or someone in the box or even just somebody who's going to be focused more on distribution. I think the guys that need more touches need a little bit more time to adapt, especially if they want to run at guys or create opportunities. So, but I like him in the middle. I think Ezra's got him in the right spot. So good for the Fire. I think Gagi did a good job to keep them level late. And taking a point on the road is a good building block for them. But he's in the right spot. He's just going to need a little bit of time.
Give me your quick take on Inter Miami, Doyle. My Gonzalo Higuain, golden boot stock. Doesn't look terrible, but he looks more like assist man than he does
the
goal scorer at times here. Yeah, he's a distributor. He's got Ariel Lassiter. He's got to make him, got to give him double digits.
Yeah, I thought he played that free role in a 3-5-2. Kind of like a 3-5-1-1. I thought he had really good chemistry with Ari Lassiter when he came in for Campagna. Campagna looked a little off the pace. He looked fit, you know, and he's got so much quality. I think he had 7 key passes. He led the league in key passes this weekend. He could have had an assist. Like, he looked really good. I think it's the type of role and that he's probably best at this stage of his career, and that formation has a lot of solidity around it. What it doesn't have is much attacking oomph. So one of those central midfielders, because like it's three dudes in central midfield and then the two forwards in front of them, like one of those guys is going to have to make those sort of like lung-busting runs out of central midfield to be like an extra runner at opportune times. I haven't seen enough Jean Mota to say if that's in his bag, but it's not really what Mo Adams does, and it's not really what Gregory does. So there's work to be done, but I thought Higuain looked really good. I thought Miami looked bought in and the structure was good. And like that's a considering what they've been for 2 years, that's a good start to this season.
And let's flip it now. Let's talk about where it's not so good. The Sanford says, "What's your biggest overreaction to week one?" And I would have to say, you know, look, Austin FC fans enjoy that. But FC Cincinnati, as we teased, this is their spoon defense and they're serious about it. Like, if you thought Charlotte was going to get a leg up in week one, trying to go for that bottom spot, uh-uh. We're giving up 5 on the road. We're making that look easy as well. Goalkeeper issues, still got them. Poor Alec Khan. And then we also have Charlotte losing 3-0. Dave, you were there. We had David Wright hit us up and says he's going to be watching the combined goal differential all year for Cincy and Charlotte. After first week, we're at -8.
Yeah. Listen. I think anyone who watched the game could say that Charlotte played some decent soccer. You saw the ideas for them. A really tough penalty. First, you score, then you get it taken off the board. I think an emotional up and down for a team that didn't have their best group and so was already sort of fighting against the current. And then you give up the penalty, which was probably a soft call, and so now you're down 1-0. I thought the ebb and flow of that was really tough for them. But I think you could see what Miguel and Harold Ramirez is going to build. And I think it can be a group that's greater than the sum of its parts, because the parts aren't that great in reality, which is what I think he was complaining about coming into the season. As I said, I think the atmosphere will be really good. And listen, if you can't put up a goal and get a result in front of 75,000 people at home in your like franchise's opener, then yeah, you'll never get a result. But I think that this isn't a team that's going to look like FC Cincinnati in year one or year two or year three.
Or four, maybe. I mean, how sure are we? Who got Cincinnati in the trophy draft? Can I ask that question? I got to go back and check here. Let's see. It was a good choice. Doyle has Charlotte. It was Kalen. Kalen, congratulations
to you. Kalen was aggressive.
Well done. You've got Cincinnati.
I picked them
in the Open Cup, though. So. Just a happy bonus that perhaps the spoon might fall into your lap, huh?
Did Kalen also pick San Jose?
No. San Jose also was no. Somebody Charlie snagged the Quakes. Which
otherwise,
was
Kalen had a pretty early lead on at least one trophy.
Yeah, this is tough, man, for Cincinnati. This is more of the same. I don't really have much to say about it other than that. This is a cathartic moment, as we sort of pointed out in the early part, for Austin to come out and immediately get that goal and then to just kind of pour it on. I will say I don't think Austin was flawless in this. Cincinnati was dangerous at times. There were moments where I thought they were going to be back in the match if they were just a little cleaner in the final third. I like what Lucho and Vasquez have together. No Brenner, I think he's suffering from injuries still, but if he can come back and be the David Gostirum player that we hope he can be, like you're searching, you're grabbing for positives if you're Cincinnati, but there are some there. They're just not on the side of the ball where you try to keep the ball to your own net. That continues to be a real struggle for them. Quick thoughts? Any quick ones on Philly, Minnesota? 1-1 draw here. Thought Minnesota had a good 30 minutes, and then Philly had a good 60, and I think it's going to be good when Mikel Ura gets there. I don't know about that Julian Carranza pick in the Golden Boot draft. That's not looking as... Yeah, week one, you know, don't overreact.
Don't worry.
Pretty much Doyle made it sound.
Pretty much none of my Golden Boot players even played this week, yeah. And I don't think any of them were hurt. So you're not going to lose, that's for sure.
Yeah, we'll just leave it there. How about Dallas-Toronto? Jesus Ferreira is a false 9 under Nico Estevez, who we know likes him in that position. Any quick thoughts on him there? Any quick thoughts on Jaquil Marshall-Ruddy? I thought he looked comfortable in his element.
Let me take the Ferreira one before you ask 6 more questions, Weeby.
I got so many questions.
This was another one of those games where it's like Ferreira playing as a false 9, even though, again, like he would say he's just a 9, and I'm sure that Nico Estevez and I know Greg Berhalter says it's just a center forward with like slightly different. But anyway, it's another argument for he helps the overall attack because Dallas's attack was really good in this one. They could have scored 3 goals. Like they were constantly getting numbers forward. It was all like almost in sync. It was impressive. But at the same time, he's not super effective in the box. You know, he doesn't make great goal scoring runs. He's never been a volume finisher. really in the box at any age. So it's like you get the benefits of having him, but like he takes a lot of stuff off the table as well. And if he's not going to be that type of guy who puts the ball in the net 15 times, it's tough. It's tough to make a guy like that the focal point of your attack. And like, okay, I guess Paul Ariola and Hunter O'Brien have to combine for 25 goals this year, you know, and Paxton Pomykal's got to score 8 coming in, you know, Brennan Cervani's got to score 6 coming out of central midfield. And like, that's a lot to ask of those guys. And it's a lot to ask of Herrera, especially a year after he was so good playing as a shadow striker, playing that like free role, like we were just talking about with Higuain. So I continue to think he's a really good player. I continue to be super skeptical of him as a starting number 9 for club or country, whether you want to call it a false 9 or not.
I thought Paul Ariola, by the way, looked really good. I think his game actually kind of grew under Losada last year, just because he had to play more inside and he looked more comfortable coming off him. For Jaquiel Marshall-Ruddy, I think you saw a guy who's ready to play and be a factor at the MLS level. I think he will be a game changer going forward. Nothing in this first game convinced me that he can defensively play at right back, which is not a role he's played before. It's not a position he's played. It's a learning process, and you add in sort of the gaps and issues that you have behind him. But no doubt about it. And I mean, he's replacing Richie Larea, who had to learn the position as well, coming in as a center midfielder and learning that spot. I think what you saw going forward, though, is like, if there's space, if there's openings, this dude can change the game, and he has the confidence to do it.
Yeah, I thought he was clean on the ball, physical in the moments he needed to be, didn't win any of those, lose any of those battles, and it's a good debut for him as 17. How about our weekly segment here? How did Mateus light him up? Who wants to tackle the Almeida project?
We talked about Jan Gregus being center back, right? I think like months ago. And it's like, we weren't that far off. It was Jackson Yule. It's similar.
I did not get to watch this one, but I watched the MLS in 15, and it's just a string of the Red Bulls either turning the ball over, winning, or passing through lines and being like 4-on-3 with about 30 yards of space between the midfield and the back line. It's just scramble central.
Yeah,
like it just feels terrifying and panicked if you were on that back line at all times, of just like, oh crap, here it is again. Oh, okay, do I commit? Do I fall back? Oh, we're all falling back as a group. Oh my god, hope they don't finish. Oh, we lost 3-1.
But they're not all falling back as a group. That's the thing. it was a 3-6-1 with man marking. The Red Bulls blew San Jose's doors in. Yeah, they were just so much better. San Jose, like, if you're facing the Red Bulls, and the Red Bulls only crossed twice from open play all game long, then your team is a mess. Your team is an incredible mess, because the Red Bulls are one of the crossingest teams in the league. They love to cross the ball from open play. And if they're only crossing twice, it means they're just running up the gut every single time. And it turns out that they were running up the gut every single time. San Jose is going to keep losing as long as they keep playing like this. And it's on the coach. It's on Matias Almeida. To be clear, it's on, like, this is a decision that Matias Almeida has made with how he lines this team up and their principles of play.
We will continue to discuss in this space as games stack up. But there is some big news in Red Bull land. Kevin Thelwell saw that MLS roster compliance day and was like, nah, no, not for me. I am off to the Premier League. Hello, Merseyside. Hello, Everton. I've changed jobs, so he is no longer with Red Bull in New York, and Dennis Hamlett will step in, who had been there, obviously. Gerhard Struber says one or two more transfers are in the pipeline, and he has a big trust in Hamlett. Well, one of those has arrived today, Ashley Fletcher from Watford on a 6-month loan, and rumors that it could be extended outside of that. He had scored some goals at Middlesbrough and had been at Watford in the EPL, but hadn't really played. He's 26-year-old forward. Luquinhas is coming in. What do we think about Thelwell? Peacing out. I mean, congratulations to him. Everton sounds like a great job.
Yeah, it never really was clear why he came here. And I think in leaving, it's not really clear what any of that was about for the last few years. Like, he left a Premier League job. He came here, didn't really establish any specific sort of ideals or fundamentals, and then he left for a Premier League job. So, and I think a lot of Red Bull fans sort of feel that way. But yeah, not exactly the best way to start a season, although the 3-1 win was really nice, and it was cool to see Omer get a ton of minutes, Daniel Edelman and Serge Gomez getting debuts. Let's go, boys. Red Bulls too.
Any final Red Bulls thoughts?
No, they looked a lot like they did at the end of last year. And if you're a Red Bulls fan, you have to be thrilled with that because they were a tough team to beat last year. But also they scored 3 goals. And remember, over the final 20 games of last season, they scored more than a single goal just twice. So getting Klimala on the board at the start, getting debuts from the 18-year-olds, or not, like, and Serge Gomez was 16, right? So getting debuts from a couple of teenagers, getting 3 points on the road, getting 90 minutes from Aaron Long, checked a lot of boxes in this game. And I think that Red Bulls fans are right to be pretty happy, especially with some reinforcements apparently set to arrive.
Let's talk quickly Orlando Montreal, and apologies to Houston RSL. We will not be addressing that 0-0 draw.
Although,
in any way other than this mention,
the one I'm about to say.
Anders is like, are you kidding me right now?
The converted college winger, fullback of the year, Griffin Dorsey in the lead.
He's in the lead to replace.
That might actually be, we should probably make that an extra
Daniel
award,
Lovitz,
right?
Richie Larea. Who else have I missed? Year after year, there's always one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was well done. Big time for Pato, meets his guy Kaká before the game, who's being honored, then goes out and gets himself a goal on opening day, much to my delight. He's back, baby. Comeback player of the year campaign has begun. But I thought Oscar Pereira with an interesting decision to start Cesar Araujo, who they went down to Uruguay and got this offseason. Also reports coming out from Argentina that Gaston Gonzalez will arrive in May. He's a 20-year-old left winger. Facundo Torres made his debut, looked clean, looked tidy, didn't have a ton of like game-breaking moments necessarily, but Orlando did have a couple. One off a turnover to make it 2-0. Benji Michel cashes that in from Mauricio Pereira, and then the first goal, as Doyle pointed out, and you go watch that on his Twitter on MLSsoccer.com in the highlights, a nice 13-pass, sort of patient build-up, and then when they saw the gap, sped it up real quick, balling behind to Juan, and that's how Pato got his goal. So a great performance from Orlando City in week one.
I will say nothing to worry about from that for CF Montreal, by the way.
Okay. Like, if Vince you're CF hit Montreal, us up and basically asked if there was.
Yeah, like if it keeps up like this, then be concerned. But the more important performance was the one against Santos, and that was a great performance. It's a tough week. Again, we'll say it again. Tough week for all of the CCL teams. Do not fret too much if you're a CF Montreal fan.
Okay, in the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. I do want to do more rounds of the Golden Boot draft, just out of curiosity, but Anders is making an executive decision that I actually will respect and honor this time. We'll hold off on that. So here's the mail.
He's mourning from last night, so
I don't want to poke the bear. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a rough 12 hours for him in the group chat. So give me the best mail we've got, Dave, and we'll get out of here.
Okay. Colt Hoffman, and his subject was Doyle was right. And email says, I hate this statement so much.
We're just
much.
Trying to build Doyle up so much to start the year. Just get all the vibes in so he's encouraged, and he'll crush us with his...
So Cole Hoffman says, I hate this statement so much, but Matt Doyle was right. It always feels like you guys hate on SKC, but when he said we can't stop anyone in transition, Atlanta proved him right. And when he questioned whether Fontas could be good again, Atlanta proved him right again. We are way too slow at the back. Shut up, Doyle, but you were right.
Fair.
That was the email. I wasn't saying that.
There's like a conspiracy going on here to just insert positivity into Doyle's timeline, and I'm not sure if I'm here for it. Anything else we got? We could talk... Any Jesse Marsh takes? I mean, I guess he's going to be the manager
like
of Leeds.
That even the
yeah,
nice
we didn't get any takes.
To Doyle,
yeah.
They'll tell him to shut up as well.
Yeah, shut up, Doyle.
You're right. Strong.
All right, that's it for us. We'll try to get into more mail on Thursday with Charlie Davies. We'll be back then. In the meantime, enjoy your week, everybody. Any thoughts, comments, questions? You know how to get at us. Adios.